Tell me a bit about yourself and your family's roots in the area.
My great-great-grandparents came here from Germany and Switzerland back in the 1850s and settled in this area, probably because we're in the Driftless area where there's lots of hills and stuff, and maybe reminded them a little bit of home. And they started farming here. They put their roots down. I think their intent was to stay a little while, make some money, and go home, but they never left. And they married local people and related to quite a few people in the local area and had large families and eventually integrated into America. My great grandfather, they called him Sweetser Yupley. He wrote an article for a paper and he wrote it in German because he refused to learn English. And he never learned English until he died. I never knew him, but that's the story my father told me.
Did you hear any stories growing up about what that integration process was like for your family?
Yes, one of the stories that I heard was they started a church when they first got here, was the Montana United Methodist Church now, and started like in 1857 or something like that. And they had services in German until 1916, when World War I broke out, and wasn't popular then to do that. Also, in World War II, if you were of German descent, people would sometimes go around and paint your mailbox yellow. So there was that too. In the area, we have Irish, we have Polish, we have German, we have Swiss, and now we have Mexicans.
Switching to work as a dairy farmer, can you tell me a bit about what it's like to work on a dairy farm? What's your average workday look like?
My average workday now, since I'm the owner and I do a lot of sitting in the office, is different than it used to be. But it used to be you'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go and milk the cows, feed them and clean them out and stuff like that. And you get done with that maybe by 9, 10 o'clock. And then after that, you do your field work or your mechanical work or anything else you got to do, like go to town. And then you'd milk the cows again at night, approximately 12 hours from when you started in the morning. That was optimum. And that was 7 days a week, holidays always. Everybody locally did the same thing. They were within 3 miles of a radius of my farm. There were 23 dairy farms. And so school had to start at a certain time because people had to get done with chores. Church had to start at a certain time because people had to be done with chores in the morning. And even football games at night had to start at 8 o'clock, so people had time to milk the cows and get to the games. And that's all changed now. I think there's maybe three or four farms within 3 miles of us now, but the same number of cows.
Well, I can imagine with less farms but the same number of cows that hired labor is more important now for dairy farmers than it was, say, a generation ago.
Absolutely. Probably 20, 25 years ago, things changed dramatically. And there got to be more cows on farms. And that was an economic thing because people, like when I started farming over 50 years ago, the margin was 50%. So if you took in $100,000, you had $50,000 profit. Back 50 years ago, you didn't have that much income, but it still was 50%. Now we're at On a good year, you're probably getting an 8% margin. So you have to have a lot more animals and a lot more volume in order to make a living nowadays. And so that has changed a lot. And because of that, you'd either have to have 12, 15 kids, or you have to hire people to work for you.
Is it possible to say how long the immigrant workforce has been here? Is this primarily people who have been here for 20 years? Is this primarily people who, just got here within the last few months? Some combination of the two? How long have immigrants been here?
The person that's working here the longest is Severo. He started in 1999, so he's been here about 25 years. He goes home every so often, every five years or so. So he's been home a few times. And his sons then came. He's had three sons that have worked for us. And that's very typical. And we have like three or four families that are working here. They go home every so often. Then they have somebody take their place while they're gone. And then when they come back, they take their jobs back again.
Why is it that so many farms are employing undocumented people in Wisconsin?
Well, I can speak for myself, and I think you can extrapolate it for everybody else, is that we really struggled 20, 25 years ago finding people to work on a farm. And it has become a cultural thing in America that working on farms is the last thing you'll do. You would rather not work than work on a farm. And it's become a very low-class type of thing. And I'm not sure why, because I really enjoy it, and a lot of other people really enjoy farming. But working on a farm seems to be what they would call a low class type of thing, and people want to avoid that. It was really, really hard. I would go into the farm supply stores and offer the people working there, because they had farm backgrounds and stuff like that, more money than they were making in the farm supply stores, and nobody would ever take the thing. And we were getting pretty desperate. We had four partners at the time, and there was 96, we were working 96 hours a week, each of us four partners trying to get the things done because we were short of people and couldn't hire anybody. And finally, we were very reluctant to switch to immigrants because we didn't know the language, didn't know the culture, we were concerned about legality. There were all kinds of reasons not to hire immigrants. But we were up backs up against the wall. We had no choice. So I asked a friend of mine that had immigrants over in Minnesota, and he told me to look in the back of the Horse Dairyman, which is a farm magazine in Wisconsin. And there was a ad for Amigos Incorporated. I called him up. They said for $350, we'll send you an employee that speaks Spanish, and he's from Mexico. And he'll come with documents and everything. So I called him, I sent him $350, and a few days later, Manuel showed up at the bus station. I brought him home, knew about two words of Spanish, but he knew what he was doing. He came and started working, and he did a fantastic job. And basically, I would have to say at that point, I fell in love. Here was a person that worked as hard as I did, and did a wonderful job. It was fun to be around. And when he left, I hired two more through Amigos Incorporated. And from there, it kind of took off.
So you mentioned this Amigos Incorporated, which sounds like it functions as like a middleman between your in this case yourself and people. It sounds like from Mexico that are looking for agricultural work, and that you go to Amigos Incorporated, and they kind of connect you with someone who's qualified. Is that usually how it works? Like there's this middleman company that kind of facilitates this immigration of in this case labor.
No, Amigos only lasted a year or two, and after that they kind of went away. And so how it works is that on our farm and on most farms, I would think, is that you tell your employees that you own this job. And so I tell Severo, you have this job, and he works from 2 in the morning till noon or something like that. And if you want to go home and you want to come back someday and take that job back, you better have somebody good to replace you while you're gone to hold your job. And that's how it works. Everybody, I no longer fire, I no longer hire. I listen to the people when they say, well, I'm going to go home in a couple of weeks, so I'm going to bring in Jose, and I'm going to train him for a couple of weeks. So he just gets on the payroll, and he works for a couple of weeks or 10 days or a week. And then Severo will come to me and say, well, Jose is up to speed, and I think I can go home. I said, okay. And then he leaves, and it's very seamless.
We have a presidential candidate, Donald Trump, who has built a campaign around mass deportation of undocumented immigrants. So let's say he is elected and he's able to do it. How could the loss of undocumented immigrants affect dairy farming and all of the industries that directly rely on dairy farming? I'm thinking meat packing, canning, cheese processing. How would these industries be affected by this loss of labor?
Doing step by step. So they took all the employees away from dairy farms. So the dairy farms would have to sell all their cows. So 90% of the cows in Wisconsin and probably in the country would go away. They would go to packing plants. Packing plants are staffed by immigrants. They're the ones that would have to kill the cows and make it into meat. And the market would be flooded with meat, but there wouldn't be any milk or dairy products or cheese or butter or ice cream to buy. That would go away from our diet. And once all that meat was consumed, that would go away. And all you'd be able to eat basically is corn and beans and some vegetables.
Keeping on the theme of if mass deportations, if Trump's promise of a mass deportation comes true, what effect would the loss of these people mean for your community more generally?
Well, Ashley Furniture would have to shut down. So all the people that work there, and I think there's 5,000, I don't know how many are immigrants. They would most likely have to find a different job if they could. Pilgrim's Pride, a chicken processing plant would have to shut down, and they would have to find different work. All the farms that are integrated through Pilgrim's Pride with chicken coops that rely on pilgrims to make the mortgage and stuff like that would probably lose their farms. The school would be decimated, and so there would only be 25% or 20% of the number of people living there now. The other part is that a lot of the people, kids in school, are citizens. So if you deport their parents and leave the citizens here that are 10 years old or 8 years old, how are they going to survive? So they would have to follow their parents home, and they're citizens.
Can you tell me how the population of Buffalo County has changed over time?
We peaked in population in the 1920s. And we are now kind of a stable population of about 13,000 people. There aren't very many major industries in the county. Probably the schools and maybe the county government are the largest employers. There is one big trucking company in Mondovi that Martin Transport that maybe has quite a few employees, but they're on the road. And as far as a cultural thing, I remember one time in the last 70 years where there was a resident that was black. So it very white, very homogenous. The big difference probably was if you were Protestant or Catholic. Those are the big differences with people. In the last 10 to 15 years, there's been a little bit of influx of Mexican workers on dairy farms. And so that's changed things a little bit. You go into Trempealeau County, which is next door, and they have a large meat packing place called Pilgrim's Pride, where they process chickens. And they also have Ashley Furniture, and they're both located in Arcadia. And Arcadia has been transformed with immigrants. 75% or more of the students in the school now are not white. The stores on Main Street that were closed before are now open, and they're Mexican stores. There's probably five Mexican stores. There's a Mexican barber. There's the banks and stuff have bilingual people. So things have changed quite a bit compared to the previous 100 years, let's say.
In your experience, have you noticed differences in immigration enforcement under Democratic versus Republican presidents?
No, that's the simple answer. There's no. I know of one farm in the last 10 years that they came and checked documents, and he is still farming today, and he's got his documents in order now. But he was really concerned, and it cost him quite a bit of money, and he almost lost the farm because of it. But I know a lot of people, a lot of farmers, and that's the only one that I know of.
Has someone employed by you been deported via a raid? Like someone came to your farm, picked up this person and deported them. Has that ever happened?
One time, 4 or 5 years ago, I was playing golf in Oregon, actually, at Bandon Dunes, and my wife called and said that the ICE was here, and they were looking for a person named Jacobo. And Jacobo worked here, or his father worked here for a while, Gregorio, and but had gone home, and from there, I don't know what happened to Jacobo. Jacobo got in a lot of trouble because he got in with the wrong group of people, and mainly it was all driving offenses anyway. And but the ICE knew that a former employee of that worked with an employee of ours worked with Jacobo for a while, and so they wanted to talk to him, and so he came in, and we had the ICE in the office. They weren't allowed to go wandering around. And the employee came into the office, and they asked him if he knew where Jacobo was, and he said, "Nope, I lost touch with him." And then they left. That's the only time that I've had it. And I've been very vocal. I've been very vocal for 20, 25 years on this topic. And that's the only one that I know. And I don't know if other people that I talk to have had no experience.
So, without seeing differences in immigration enforcement in your region between Democratic and Republican presidents, including Trump, why would someone who hires undocumented labor or depends on an industry that depends on undocumented labor support mass deportations now?
What I've been told by those people is that he doesn't really mean that. Back in 2016 or 20, whenever it was that he was running, he was saying on day one he's going to deport everybody. There was somebody in California that was a big Trump supporter, and he had the dairy farmer. So we called him up and we asked him, why are you saying that you support Trump and he's going to take all your employees away? Oh, he said, Trump assured him that he didn't mean me. And so I would assume that's what people think. But all we can do is what go on history. And he became president. He had the power to do whatever he wanted to, I guess, and he didn't do it. What we found at that point was that our employees became very concerned, and a lot of the people working here left, went home to Mexico. And dairy farmers were running about 4 or 5 people short, and everybody else had to pick up the slack, and everybody was working all the time. And then after about 7 or 8 months, everybody's came back because they knew that he wasn't going to do what he said he was going to do, and nothing changed. So I think based on that, we can assume the same thing now.
So, if I can paraphrase and let me know if this is the correct characterization of what you're saying, is that from your perspective, the calls for mass deportation now, it's about fear as much as it is about policy. So, the fear that undocumented people, we're going to come after you, so you better self-deport now. Is that a fair characterization? Is that kind of how you see it? That it's the fear is the point?
I think it's the rhetoric. A lot of people have no interaction with immigrants, and so they rely their opinions are based off of somebody else's opinion, and so they listen to somebody else that badmouths immigrants, and they believe that, and because they haven't taken the time to really get to know an immigrant or study the thing, because you're busy and you have a lot of things that you want to do in life, and you don't have time to study everything. So some issues don't touch you very much, so you don't worry about it. And one of them is immigration. person in town or something, or somebody out in the country that never sees an immigrant but watches TV, and they have to have an opinion. So they listen to somebody on TV or somebody in online or whatever talk about immigration, and they base their opinions on that.
Over the last decade, there's been numerous articles about anti-immigrant stances in rural communities and among people who either hire undocumented labor or rely on undocumented labor to keep the food economy going. And the reasoning often couches these anti-immigrant stances in terms of economics, as in immigrants are taking jobs or immigrants are a drain on public resources, etc. But on the other hand, I think it's fair to see a call from mostly white people to remove mostly brown people as just racist and nothing else. So, what's your read on this? Is there an argument for economic anxiety, or is this just racism couched in economic terms?
I would have to look long and hard to find somebody that lost his job because an immigrant took it from him. And one example that I would have of rural people actually integrating immigrants into the society is I'm a golfer, and one of my employees, Roberto, is a golfer as well. So we're a pair, we're partners, and we play Lee at our golf course in Cochrane. And Roberto's a member over there, as am I. And so we go to League Golf. It's over now, but during the summer, on Mondays and Thursdays, and we ride together. And when we get there, we get out of the car and get our clubs and stuff and start walking to the clubhouse, and everybody's doing the same thing. And they're all greet us by, "Hi, Roberto. Hi, Roberto." And nobody says, "Hi, John." They all say, "Hi, Roberto." And so that group of people, all white, all probably conservative, probably ages from 20 to, I'm the oldest probably, so 75. And they've become big fans of Roberto. And example of that is on Thursday night league this year, he and I won the league. And winning a league is pure luck. And so we were lucky. And at the awards ceremony, we all get together and we eat the meal, and then they hand out the prizes. And all of us golfers are there. And when they announced us, they all said, "Speech, speech, speech." They didn't tell me to speak, but they wanted Roberto to give a talk. And he had a smile from ear to ear. He didn't give a speech, but we took the money and ran. So, in that little enclave there, where there's probably, I have no idea, but probably a majority of Trump supporters, they have learned to that immigrants aren't horrible people, that they are somebody, once you get to know them, they're just like you and I.
Is there a difference between how you've noticed people speak about immigrants generally versus immigrants specifically? Like, I like Roberto, we have a lot in common, but immigrants in general either mistrust them or don't have the same kind of positive, warm feelings. Have you noticed that there is a disconnect between feelings about an individual immigrant versus immigrants in general?
We give a lot of talks to groups, and somebody will, after we give our talk and we give an explanation of the stories of immigrants, and they're really good ones too. People ask, what can they do? How can they be a better citizen, or how can we help our immigrants integrate into society? And we always tell them the same thing, because it was a difficult question, and we never knew how to answer that. But over the years, I think we've kind of figured it out. Roberto's an example, is get to know somebody that doesn't look like you, an immigrant, and get to know them so you can call them by their first name. Not just those immigrants, but Jose or Roberto or Maria. Once you get to that stage, you're going to have a whole different attitude.